Hi, Calvin.
Hi.
Hi, Calvin. We are now talking about the photon and light and light technology and how it matters in what we do in science. We've already gone through a brief introduction, exploration of how you came to see that a photon is not a particle, but it's part of an electromagnetic boson field. And here we now will go into the first part of a series of four, in which we'll look at the photons, the electromagnetic field, spectral lines, and light technology. I'd like to ask you to immediately take a start with your presentation of the photon as it is now understood in tetrionics.
Okay, thanks, Otto. We'll obviously begin with the first statement that jumps out for those that are familiar with the last few lectures and that are growing familiar with tetrionics, and that is that in physics we have two types of quanta, I suppose you'd say, that are at work. Two states, the material and the immaterial. Physics to date has been focused on the material objects for historical reasons, and we've studied how they moved in response to forces that are either inherent in them or impressed upon them, and then we mathematically model these motions as acceleration, etc., and changes of energy, and use that math to extrapolate or trying to deduce certain things about the immaterial components of physics. Tetrionics obviously defines mass energy as immaterial fields of force, be they electromagnetic or linear versus angular momentum, and differentiates them from matter, which are obviously formed from quanta of mass energies that have formed a tetrahedral topology, a 3D closed topology where they have a positive displacement to their geometries, and in doing so what you see immediately is with the immaterial fields we have two basic quantas that make up virtually everything out there, and mathematically we can sum these up or generalize them as odds and evens mathematically. In the case of bosons, the zero point field, the quanta of charge, or the Planck's quanta, the Planck's constant, we see we've already defined the zero point field to be a equilateral geometry of mass energy momenta, which has electric and magnetic components, as indicated in the illustrations. 5.07 is the basic one that introduces them and compares them to photons. You can see in 5.07 that in the center of the W bosons we have positive and negative charges. That's the quanta. It's each quantum coin or each Planck's constant has a positive and a negative charge, and the first odd number is one. It's the primal integer number. So a zero point field, the smallest field of energy, mass energy momenta that we can create or use in tetrionics, is a equilateral Planck quanta. It has a charge of positive and negative. One equilateral geometry of mass energy. As we arrange and put together these triangles, the next obvious number is two, and you can see from that illustration there on the right hand side of it that when two Planck quanta of opposite charges or even the same charges come together, they couple inductively along their edge, which is what we know to be the weak force. They couple via magnetic induction and they share their energy and form this diamond pattern, as it were, two equilaterals or a 2 pi geometry. It's a planar field, just like the boson, But unlike the boson, because we've coupled charges, you can either have a neutral charge, as illustrated there, with a positive and a negative charge to come together to cancel out and leave us with a magnetic moment, a north and a south pole direction. Or if two similar charges came together, you'd have a positive charge or a negative charge created. And they are what we term electrostatic fields. They're the fields that develop around a hand or a particle to give us charge that we can measure. When we look at a particle in motion, or if we look at a particle interacting with others around it, if the particle itself is not in motion, it's because its linear momenta has cancelled out. It's acting in opposition to end up with a net zero momenta. So electrostatic fields, hence their name, have two positive or two negative Planck quanta in this photon geometry, if you like, a diamond geometry, whereas the photon itself is a neutral particle. So by definition, it must have a positive and a negative arranged as you see it there. Coincidentally, if you were to flip the page over and look at these photons from the other side, the negative will be at the top, the positive will be at the bottom. So in that respect, the particle is if the coordinate system is of observation is changed, we end up with the reverse particle. And equally, you can have photons of this geometry traveling towards each other, and they are their own antiparticle. If you were to duplicate that arrangement of Planck quanta and put it directly above the other photon traveling towards it, you'd see that you would have the negative traveling towards the positive. It would be the mirror image. Without even having to rotate or flip the geometry, it immediately makes its own mirror image. It's its own antiparticle, which is quite different to how bosons are, which is why they can be differentiated in physics and measured differently. One has a charge, the other doesn't. One is its own antiparticle, the other one isn't. It's the mirror. So chirality comes into it simply by adding two quanta together. But what you see there is that photons are always 2π. So the second quanta in physics, the source of even numbers, is this 2π, because the source of any even number is a 2. So photons are fundamental particles of electromagnetism, just as even number or odd numbered bosons fundamental quanta of charge. If you were to look, for example, in 1801, we'll move on to the photoelectric fields. Every particle in motion has its energy, or its mass energy of motion, stored in a chem field. We've discussed these before. It's a kinetic EM field. You'll see there that we've got a kinetic energy component, which is a half mv squared, and we have a magnetic dipole moment, which is a half mv squared as well, because the electric equals the magnetic in fields. The field itself represents the field of motion, so it's the total field, or the total energy of the field, equals the mass matter by the velocity squared. And that's purely a result of the equilateral geometries that we've discussed before as well. As we add more and more Planck quanta to the field to make up the energy, they always form these equilateral chem fields, where we have a kinetic energy component and a magnetic moment component. The kinetic energy component, a half of the field, is exactly the same geometry as a photon, or as an EM wave. This geometry is inherent. When you measure a equilateral field from the top to the apex, or top to bottom, in the up-down position on this page, you will always have, I won't say always, you will get diamond-shaped quanta, as you can see highlighted in that illustration. You can see the the lighter shaded areas are diamond shapes. That's the kinetic energy component, the electric field permittivity of the chem field. If you were to measure that field from left to right or transversely instead of longitudinally, you would measure odd number quanta in each and every energy level of that field. That arrangement of Planck quanta, or the zero point fields, the quanta of EMs, is what gives us the differentiation between bosons and photons. If you measure the particle head on, you're measuring the photon, the linear energy momentum, the kinetic energies of that field. If you measure them from the side, you measure the charge quanta, the bosons. These were historically, prior to relativity and even sometimes in early relativity, referred to as longitudinal or transverse masses within the relativistic fields. And as we've developed this basic model, we also note that if you add more energy to that field, the quanta themselves get physically smaller. That's what creates relativity, the contractions of relativity, the Lorentz and relativistic contractions or wavelength contractions are all the result of squeezing more and more energy into that field in order to create a larger velocity. Or if you want to slow the particle down, you reduce the number of quanta in that field, which then accordingly reduces the energy momenta of the field and reduces the associated square root velocity. It's all geometric, but at all times, if you're talking photons, we're obviously talking the kinetic energy component of a field, which is this diamond shape. So in some respects, well, in most respects actually, you can term photons as bundles of kinetic energy. Not just EM energy, but they really refer to and relate to the longitudinal energy momenta component of chem fields, or fields of, energies of motion. All, if a force is applied, all that energy that the force has applied goes into this chem field of mass energy. If we measure it longitudinally, we're measuring the kinetic energies. So we're measuring these photon components, whereas if we measure them transversely, we're measuring the bosons. If we look closely at these quantum levels, as the chem levels in illustration 2504, we see what I've just pointed out, which is the kinetic energy component, the magnetic components in the center illustration. We see that the standard formulation, which is kinetic energy, is a half mv squared, and in this case in tetrionics we use a capital M to represent mass matter topologies, because we're talking about the mass of the matter topology by the velocity squared gives us a chem field, which is the equilateral geometry. A half of that field is the kinetic energy component. Another way of formulating that half mv squared would be to say, take the linear momentum, which is the square root of the field, square it, so p squared, and divide it by two masses for the two quanta that make up a photon. So we're just dividing, p squared is just the energy of the field, and we're dividing it by two masses, so by even numbers, if you like. Sometimes, and this harks back to my correction earlier, some cases you'll find that that's an integer number when you divide by two. Sometimes you'll find that you end up with a row of half integers or bosons along the bottom, because the squared number for the energy of the field is not an even number. For example, if it was 49, 7 squared, and you divide it by two, you'll end up with a row of bosons along the bottom because you're measuring the photons. So in that case, if you did the math would be interpreted that you had half wavelengths, a certain frequency and some half wavelengths in that field. when in fact we know a half wavelength, a half F, is nu. So it's a boson. HF divided by 2 is HV. You can see on all the tetrionic drawings on the left-hand corner of the chem field, I, in most cases, write H nu to indicate that measuring transversely, you have bosons, which sum up to HV squared, which is the equilateral or the squared energy of the field, and its square root is a velocity, or if you're associating that with a matter particle, it would be MV, capital M, and V for velocity, and that'd be the linear momentum, the square root of that field. So you also see that, as indicated there, that the linear momentum is contained entirely within the kinetic energy, or the photon field of a chem field. It's the longitudinal vector of force, as opposed to the transverse vector, magnetic vector, of the magnetic dipole that's created. When a particle is stationary, these fields do not exist. These are purely fields of mass, energy, momenta that are a result of motion or forces applied to a particle that create motion. So in the case, as you can see on the left-hand side, we have a number of deuterium nuclei where the electrons are bound in each deuterium nuclei. The energy level of each deuterium nuclei, its mass energy content of its matter topology, directly determines the rotational speed or the chem field of the electron that's bound to it. You can see here in each of these electrons, as they move up the energy levels, the direction of the chem field, the little shaded area, is color-coded to indicate an increase to the point where the chem field reaches N9, or 81 quanta, and it has enough energy to break free of the deuterium nuclei. And that's the basics of the Bohr radii, how increasing energy of electrons that are bound to atoms makes them jump from one energy level to the other. You can see that these energy levels, ranging from red to violet, or 1 to 8, increase in squared numbers. And you can't have a 1.5 energy level for a chem field. You can have 1, 4, 9, 16, 25, 36, 49, or 64. If you have 81, which is 9 squared, the electron breaks free. It has sufficient energy momenta to overcome the coulombic attraction that draws it to and binds it to the nuclei in the first place. So each of these energy levels represents a specific deuterium nuclei that it binds to, or if we had, for example, a N1 deuterium nuclei with an electron in it, we could add energy to it to make it jump to, say, energy level 4 by adding 15 Planck quanta to go from 1 to 16 in the field, 4 squared. If there was no deuterium nuclei or no free position for that N4 electron to bind to, one of two things would happen. If there was no nuclei and it was the highest energy level, it would break free. It would move off at a certain velocity. Instead of spinning in position, it would move away with a certain velocity. Square root of 16 is 4, so the velocity would be 4, and that's just a scaling factor at this stage. Or it could release some of that energy and drop back down to energy level 1 in order to bind back in the original position or a spare position at energy level N1 in the atom. In doing so, it releases these bosons and occasionally these photons, and occasionally a boson, depending on whether it's an even or an odd number of quanta in the chem field. And of course, that even or odd number will always be a squared number. So in this illustration, we've shown the photoelectric effect. We've shown where mass energy is stored in particles in motion or excited particles. And we show that the square root is the linear momentum component of those fields. And again, we highlight how squared numbers are the electromagnetic fields themselves, and how even numbers are photons, odd numbers are bosons in physics. That's a basic mathematical operation that will get you out of a lot of trouble when you're trying to immediately determine what sort of particle you're dealing with. Look at how many Planck quanta make it up, and it will almost immediately tell you what sort of field it is that you're dealing with. Odds are bosons, evens are photons, and squared numbers can be either termed a chem field or an EM field of some sort, or in the case of a charged topology, they're a Higgs boson. Rather unique, but that's the only conflict in the arrangement. In 2505, we take this relationship for the geometry of photons and we apply it directly to the photoelectric effect. The Bohr radius increases and de Broglie relationships. As we add energy to these fields, photons of energy, the energy momentum of the field increases, but more importantly, as you can see there illustrated quite clearly, the actual physical dimensions of the equilateral quanta and the diamond shaped quanta of the photons is reduced as the energy increases. Another way of saying that is that the wavelength, the physical wavelength of the Planck quanta, as energy is increased, the wavelength decreases. So the greater the energy of the chem field, the smaller the quantum wavelength of the quanta within that field. That changing size of quanta, whether it's photons or bosons, is what's termed Lorentz velocity contractions. As you increase, they get smaller. As you decrease the energy content or the velocity, the physical wavelength gets larger. There's many explanations that have been around since de Broglie first postulated it in his thesis on physics. But here we see the actual geometry of both bosons and photons in the fields of motion. So as particles get accelerated, doesn't matter if they're an electron, a proton, or a ton of lead, makes no difference. mv squared is the formulation for the kinetic EM field. And as the velocity increases, so does the energy content, and the physical dimensions, the Planck lengths of the quanta, reduces. Doesn't matter if you measure it transversely, you measure the boson wavelength. If you measure it longitudinally, you measure the photon wavelengths. And that's important to understand because, again, it impacts on the math. But the math has no way of really showing this differentiation, whereas the geometry does. So these photons, as you can see there, the red and black quanta, make up these chem fields. They fill it. The distributions, 2508, the distribution of photons and bosons in an EM field follows a predictable pattern. And that pattern is normally termed a Gaussian curvature or a bell curve or a normal distribution. There's many names depending on what field of math or physics you're referring to. But we can see that in the case of any distribution of energy in a chem field, the arrangements of odds and evens, if you like, within the squared numbers or the odds and evens that go to making up a squared number. In the case of the evens, we have a Planck quanta, or Planck quanta divided by 2 pi, which is Dirac's constant. So if you want to refer to the distribution of photons within an EM field of motion, you're really talking about Dirac's constant rather than Planck's constant. Planck's constant refers to the bosons rather than the photons. Much has been made of this distribution. Some say it hints at statistical probability. It's what the statistical probability of physics, as it's currently interpreted, rests upon, because the distribution of these energy levels within that field will always sum up to one, to unity. And they form this normal distribution, so they interpret it as being a statistical probability of finding a photon of certain energy level within the field at any one time. They're all wrong. The reason for this statistical distribution is simply bosons have equilateral geometries, photons have diamond geometries, 2 pi, and the sum of bosons and photons, or odds and evens, within any chem field always sum up to be a squared number, and they are always equilateral geometries. It's the geometry that produces what's interpreted as a bell curve in quantum mechanics. And from that misinterpretation onwards, a lot of things get read into physics, and particularly the math of physics, that just don't exist. Even Heisenberg's uncertainty principle is banished from tetrionics, because we know the position and the energy momentum of every single quanta, whether it's a boson or a photon. We know its position, its location, its geometry within any field that it makes up a part of. And you can see there that in this case we have a chem field, and the bosons and photons have been color-coded. In this case, it's the bosons that have been color-coded to give us a longitudinal distribution which matches the normal distribution in the center of the diagram. But again, just to reinforce the point, because all matter and EM fields are comprised of equilateral mass energy momenta, they always take on this distribution curve when they are formed within a, or create a charged geometry, even if it's the charged fascia of matter, topologies. The equilateral geometry is inherent. So now that we've differentiated the two forms of energy momentum, the two quanta, the bosons and photons, 2601 looks at the physical geometries of the electric and the magnetic fields in a photon. You can see in this illustration on the left-hand side, we have our bosons, odd numbers. In the case of a boson, it's 1 pi geometry, as opposed to photons that are 2 pi geometries. And again, mathematically, Max Planck's equation for bosons is E equals n h nu, which simply says it's the energy is equivalent to the number of Planck quanta in the field, whereas Einstein's photoelectric work defines energy as E equals hf, or the frequency of Planck quanta in a field. Here's where the English fouls up the math, because in a lot of cases, you'll see people say E equals H nu equals HF, where nu is just a number or a frequency of Planck quanta, and the frequency of Planck quanta as expressed by Einstein is the energy. They're equivalent to each other. Well, they're not, because we know now that H nu are always odd numbers and HF are always even numbers. 2 pi. So you cannot write H nu equals E equals HF, because that's mathematically equivalent to saying 1 equals 2, or odds equals evens. Geometrically, it is impossible. That's where tetrionics gives us a greatest insight and starts to put a rigorous grammar to the current math. No longer can we equate those two equations to each other unless we do so in a numerical fashion with a constant. We can also see at the top is James Clerk Maxwell's unified equations for electric and magnetic fields, or electromagnetism, and we can see them geometrically represented in the geometry of a photon. We have electric permittivity, or the E field components, positive and of the positive and negative charges, and we have the magnetic dipoles in every photon, and again they're distinct from bosons because we have a diamond 2 pi geometry for each magnetic field, as opposed to a boson's equilateral or 1 pi geometry for the magnetic fields. But we can see that this geometry and its associated linear momentum is all that there is to the photon's geometry. It's a double boson, if you like, two charges back to back, inductively coupled via the weak force to give us a 2 pi quantum of electromagnetism as mathematically formulated by Maxwell's laws. They're subject to length contractions as formulated with their linear momentum as through de Broglie's relationships. And this arrangement of electric and magnetic fields and mass energy momenta is reflective or generates, is the source of Schrodinger's wave function for electromagnetic fields. We'll discuss that further on. In 2602, we take a closer look at the photon itself. We see that the geometry is obviously in the middle. The photon itself is an example of kinetic energy, or just generalized as energy. It has an electric and a magnetic component, two bosons again, giving us a neutral charge, or it can be a positive charge or a negative charge, depending on what type of field is being created. But in both cases, we have a electric permittivity component and a magnetic permeability. These are constants that are fairly well known. They have some rather peculiar SI units, amps squared, seconds to the fourth, kilograms, square meters, meters cubed, and the inverse of that for permittivity, which makes it really difficult to discern exactly how to bring them back into normal physics, or basic physics of Newtonian classical mechanics, if you like. We've discussed previously how the permittivity by the magnetic permeability, epsilon naught by mu naught, gives us a mathematical number, which is a constant, which is the inverse of C squared. We've touched on C squared as a spatial coordinate system for mass energy, and it's basically 1 second of time. It's a radial measurement. It's the distance that a photon can spread out from its source point in 1 second. Obviously, a photon is made up of two bosons, so it radiates bilaterally from its source point both directions at once. This is why we have reflectors in torches, because half the energy is going in the direction, opposite direction of what we want. So we place a reflector to bounce that energy back in the direction that we'd like it to shine. But in 1 second, a photon can propagate at C, or C squared, if you like. It's C by C because it's bilaterally. So we have a circular spatial coordinate of C squared. The magnetic permeability and the electric permittivity, the cross product of those two constants, gives us the impedance of free space. So in the case of energy in free space, in a vacuum, if you like, allowed to propagate in that medium, the impedance of that medium will determine the velocity of propagation. 1 over c squared gives us the basis of determining that light propagates at the speed of light, which sounds rather strange to say when you say it, but the propagation of electromagnetic energy is the speed of light in a vacuum. If you go into a different medium with a different impedance of propagation, the velocity will change. Water, light moves slower in water than it does in the vacuum of space. It moves slower in air than it does in the vacuum of space. The medium that it moves through directly impacts. And you can see on the left-hand side where Maxwell used the cross product to determine the speed of light, which was the first indication that light is an electromagnetic phenomena. But what he discovered was only half the story. As we look really close into the photon itself, using tetrionic geometries in 2603, we look at the various aspects of the photon itself. And remember, we're only talking about photons here, two quanta, not EM waves, which are even quanta. We see that the photon is made up of two quanta, two bosons of charge, plus and minus, and that the energy within those plus and minus charges, or the quantized angular momentum, creates a diamond shape, a diamond geometry, which can be, if you interpret the quantized angular momentum as an electrical inductance, or view the inertia as an inductive component of these fields, as we do with Planck quanta, we have two of them. And if you then look at the vector rotation of this quantized angular momentum, the electrical fluxes, you see that in the case of photons, the energy circulates in a figure of eight, or a Lemsky pattern. It becomes in fact a back-to-back inductive coupling, which is a transformer. So the energy of any photons, two bosons coming together, equalizes within the photon geometry. It's always a balanced energy state. And the energy, if you map it electrically, continues to circulate in that photon indefinitely. It goes on and on and on for as long as that photon exists. When the photon is stopped, the photon gives up all its energy to whatever stops it. In the case of an electron, it becomes part of the chem field. In the case of a proton, it becomes part of the energy of the proton, the mass energy. But we can see that there's two distinct fields. There's an electric field, which has the square root linear momenta component. It's always a positive and negative charge with a bidirectional linear momentum component. And there's also a transverse magnetic component of a north and a south pole, which is usually mapped as with a magnetic vector. The problem comes in that the magnetic vector, A, is normally mapped in a usually in a north-south, but it should be a south-north direction internal to the geometry. Magnetic fields inside a photon travel from south to north internally, and north to south external to the 2π geometry. So the magnetic vector A should always point south to north, not north to south. And it should be, in reality, a bidirectional vector anyway, because we've shown that it's not a unidirectional force in physics, or in tetrionics particularly. 2604 just reiterates what I've just said, and it summarizes that photons are two H nu geometries, two bosons, or dual boson waveforms. If you measure them transversely, you have two bosons. Longitudinally, you have a photon with a frequency f. But the relationship is 2 h nu equals hf. An important point here is that it is the geometry of the electric and the magnetic fields in a photon that create the changing magnetic and electric relationships of electromagnetic waves. By that I mean, if you were to hold up a pencil, for example, to the photon at the top and slowly move it either left to right or right to left, makes no difference. As you move it across, you will see that the electric field increases to a maximum geometrically, then begins to decrease. As it decreases, the magnetic field increases. As the magnetic field reaches its maximum, the electric has reached its minimum at the center, the zero point. Continuing to move the pencil, you will see that the magnetic field then begins to decrease as the electric increases to a maximum. And then the process repeats. What that description of waveforms increasing magnetic versus decreasing electric and vice versa, it is what Maxwell described in his unified field equations. It's a sinusoidal waveform, and it's not a physical changing of one field into another. These are two distinct, separate types of fields. There's an electric and a magnetic with different geometries within the photon. And it is when the photon moves that these fields change, either in electric and or magnetic intensity with respect to each other. The geometry is what gives rise to the sinusoidal waveform that we measure. There is no changing electric into magnetic or vice versa. There is either electric and or magnetic in geometric proportion to each other. And it is the motion of the photon, or the motion of the detector, that creates the appearance of a changing electromagnetic field. The photons don't require any ether or any medium in order to propagate. They have their own energy, momenta. And just like a boson, if upon creation, the linear or the square root momentum of the energy of the field will result in a spreading out of the field, a propagation of the electromagnetic components. It's an inverse squared relationship, so over time it decreases in relation to the square of the distance from the source. And each photon has, as you can see there, an intrinsic magnetic moment. It's termed the Evans photomagneton. But because we have a pair of coupled bosons, the electric fields cancel out. The positive and the negative equals zero, and the magnetic north and south poles align to give us a stronger magnetic dipole, an intrinsic magnetic dipole. So every photon of energy has a magnetic dipole, which allows us to manipulate them. And again, they propagate it at a velocity with respect to the medium that they're moving through. 2605 then just looks at the vector forces that these electromagnetic fields create within the photon itself. we can see that, as we just discussed before with the pencil, the electric field component is what creates the linear momentum, the square root of the energy field. It's the kinetic component, if you like, of the photon. That is the direction that the photon expands out in. It doesn't expand out in the magnetic direction per se. The forces are directed along the square root of the scalar EM field. And they propagate out at C or V for any medium. On the right-hand side, you can see the magnetic component highlighted and its vector forces. You'll note that in the north magnetic fields, there is a north and a south component. The north component repels north fields within the north itself, but attracts south poles towards the singularity point at the center of the field, and the opposite for the north, for the south pole. It repels south poles but attracts north. This is the basis of magnetic of bar magnets attracting each other. The singularity point where the fields all reach a zero point right in the center of the photon's geometry is normally termed either a singularity, or in the case of bar magnets with electromagnetic fields, it's termed a block wall, B-L-O-C-H. In either case, the geometry of the electric and the magnetic fields creates this singularity where a north magnetic field becomes reduces to zero firstly, but then becomes a south magnetic field as it continues to move out. And again, it's not really changing from north to south. You're moving from a geometric region of north to a geometric region of south poles via the singularity point. Again, if we move on to 2609, this illustration just simply serves to point out that bosons have different geometries to photons. Bosons, as we've mentioned, are transverse trapezoidal geometries of mass energy, and they always have odd Planck quanta within them, whereas the photons are diamond-shaped mass energy momenta, and they have no charge, but they always have an even number of Planck quanta within them. As we build up EM waves, as you see at the bottom there, you can see that we can measure both of these fields are identical EM waves, or EM fields. The left-hand one measures the bosons within the field, or the transverse masses, whereas the right-hand side measures the frequency of photons within that same field, the longitudinal energy momenta of the field, E equals HF. Where you see HF in physics, you should always associate the frequency with two bosons or a photon. As we mentioned, in the case of HF, 2610 shows us that photons, or the frequency of the photon, the number of photons, has distinct characteristics apart from its geometric geometry. As I mentioned, the diamond-shaped geometry of photons is equivalent to the kinetic energy fields of chem fields. You can see that we've reworded the kinetic energy to be twice the momentum squared, or two mass velocities. In this case, it's two quanta. So again, you can rewrite that as two H nu, two bosons equals the energy of photons, which equals HF. The Planck's constant, H, remains the same. What changes is whether we're talking two bosons or a single photon, And again, the energy in the case of a photon is 2 times mc squared. It's 2 quanta propagating with a just Planck's mass at the velocity of light by 2, because it radiates bilaterally. So photons are 2D mass energy waveforms. They can have an equivalent, an equivalency between the mass and the energy. It depends on whether you have a time component or not. Interestingly, if you don't have a time component and you're measuring the energy component, you can't really say that you have changing electromagnetic fields. The energy is just a scalar measure of both. It's not until you measure the photon over time that you have a way of detecting changing electric and magnetic fields. And that's what the center illustration on the right is all about. We have 2 photons propagating along, and this one shows the sinusoidal relationship very clearly. From the central point, the yellow dot in the center, the light beams propagate in 2 directions at once. They're the antiparticle of each other, even though they're identical to each other. If they, instead of propagating outwards, propagated inwards, they would cancel each other out. But if, again, you were to measure the field strength, or the width of the diamond, if you like, the intensity of the electric and the magnetic fields, in this case we've highlighted the electric, you can see that as the geometry widens for the electric field, the value, the strength of the field increases. It reaches a maximum and then decreases to zero at the block wall, or the singularity point of the photon, the middle of it, and then increases to a negative value, at which point it then decreases back down to zero before the next photon is measured. This is the sine wave trace for the electric field of photons in motion. This is what a photo detector measures, so far as electric field intensities or strengths. And again, we see that the sine wave produced is an artifact of the equilateral geometry of the photons themselves, or the bosons within the photons. So it's the geometry that creates what we've interpreted as a sine wave, or a propagation of electromagnetic energies in either a transverse or longitudinal fashion. The bottom illustration simply summarizes all these relationships that we've discussed. Kinetic energy is half the scalar energy of the chem field. The kinetic energy has the same 2π geometry as a photon. The electric field component of a chem field is comprised of photons. If you were to take a longitudinal measurement of the chem field, you may or may not get integer numbers of photons within that field, depending on whether the V squared is a odd or an even number. And again, the V squared is simply the number of quanta within the chem field, which is the kinetic energy, or the energies of motion of the field. Classically, mathematics states kinetic energies as a half mv squared, but in that formulation it's only referring to the longitudinal vector forces of motion. It neglects the magnetic component, the transverse magnetic fields of the chem field. Add the kinetic energy plus the magnetic component, you get mv squared. And of course, as we mentioned, depending on how much energy is within that field, a proportional velocity is created for any mass matter associated with the field. That is, an electron with X amount of quanta photons within its field will be accelerated to a given velocity in proportion to the mass matter of the particle associated that's being accelerated. 26.11 simply shows this harmonic sinusoidal motion, the quantum harmonic motion. Some people confuse quantum harmonic motion with bosons or with zero-point fields. We've shown that a zero-point field is a half wavelength, a half frequency. To have a full frequency or a full harmonic motion, you have to have two bosons, a diamond-shaped geometry. And this illustration simply shows the motion geometry, the motion of it for photon geometry past a detection line, and the subsequent measurement of the electric and the magnetic fields of that photon. They line up, you just line up the lines and you'll see that they're measuring the peak amplitude of the positive in the second illustration is where the geometry is widest. Third photon geometry is where we're changing from positive to negative at the zero point. So it's the middle of the translation of the electric. But at the same time, the magnetic field is at its maximum when the electric is at its minimum. This creates what's called a quadrature wave. Four fields. Maxwell equations have difficulty describing these fields, hence the formulations you see from Maxwell. Relativity makes it even more complicated. Tetragonics simplifies it right back down to these geometries. If you want to envisage what it's like to catch up with a photon and what you would see, this is exactly what you would see. As you approach the photon, you see the buildup of electric fields. Then as they diminish, you see the buildup of magnetic. And then the reverse happens. You have this sinusoidal waveform, this quadrature wave, as you're moving relative to the photon. But if there was no motion relative to a photon, you would have a static electric and or magnetic field that is not changing. You need the relative motion in order to create a changing electromagnetic field. This is part of the explanation for the moving magnet conductor problem that special relativity is built on. Special relativity has a different explanation. This is the tetragonic geometric explanation for changing electromagnetic fields. There'll be discussions, no doubt, later on where Einstein's relativistic assumptions went wrong and how they're corrected in tetragonics. 26.12 gives us our first glimpse into EM waves comprised of photons. You can see in this case the two photon fields, two EM waves drawn there, they have the same 2π geometry as photon. This is because the photons are 2π, so an electromagnetic field must be an even number, and its geometry must be reflective of the quanta that builds it up. Just as a charged field is made up of bosons, so it must be equilateral, EM fields made of photons must be even pi geometries. If you then break these fields up, as we've done at the top, into their electric components, taking just a longitudinal slice, you can see the alternating positive and negative charges, as labeled there. Alternating positive and negative, and you'll see that if you're heading to the right, it's a positive field that you're detecting. If it's at the left, you detect a negative field. It is 180 degrees out of phase, depending on the direction of motion or detection. So again, the EM field has positive and negative fields. The photons are neutral charges. So therefore, the EM field, which is an even number, is also neutral, but it has constituent positive and negatives. If you look closely at the arrangement of positive and negatives in that field, you'll see that they alternate. In a negative field component, you have more negatives than you have positives. In the positive side, you have more positives than negatives. But in the entire field, you have an equal number of positive and negatives. Geometrically, we can express all this as Euler's formula. We can show that the positive field is 180 degrees out of phase with the negative component of the field. We can show that the linear momentum of these charged fields is the square root, because we know the geometry of and the fact that P squared equals the scalar field, or the linear momentum is the square root of the scalar field, whichever way you wish to interpret it. Geometrically, you can express that as e to the I pi equals negative 1 for a negative field. And if e to the I pi can be expressed for a negative field, you can do the same thing for a positive field. So therefore, e to the I pi, which is negative 1, plus a positive 1 field equals a neutral field. So the positive e to the I pi, which is the geometry and the number of quanta, it's an exponential equilateral geometry for a negative charge field, equals negative 1, and you have 180 degree phase change. You have a positive field with a positive linear momentum. In both cases, it's a positive linear momentum. Important to point that out, and I'll touch on that very shortly. But as we mentioned, the sum of the positive and the negative fields is a neutral field. E to the I pi plus 1 equals 0. And that's Euler's formula. If you rearrange Euler's formula slightly, you'll find that the square root of negative 1 comes into play, as I mentioned. In tetrionics, if you take negative 1 to be the negative charge field, you can then show that the square root of negative 1 is in fact a positive linear momentum number. Again, the mathematics cannot show you this, because the mathematics will tell you that the square root of negative 1 cannot be found, because any number multiplied by itself, even a negative number, will generate a positive. And that's what's happening here. The square root of a negative charge field is a real linear momentum in physics, just as the square root of the positive charge field is a real linear momentum. So here we're doing what Euler and mathematics in general could not do, and that is we're giving a geometric representation or explanation for the physicality of the square root of negative 1. Cannot be done in maths. Can be done in physics using tetrionics. And again, if you look at the relationship of the electric fields to the magnetic fields, as illustrated on the right-hand side, you'll see that the electric is always 90 degrees out of phase with the magnetic. And that's what that center bar graph is showing. The cos and the cosine relationships in Euler's equation, when it's re-expressed trigonometrically to cos and cosine components, is simply an expression of electric and the magnetic fields with respect to each other. 90 degrees out of phase and 180 degrees out of phase has the opposite sign of positive or negative charges, or the opposite magnetic field compared to what was just measured. Again, at the top center, you see the sine wave relationship re-expressed from the geometries of the electric and the alternating electric and the oscillating magnetic fields. And you see that it produces a quadrature wave, exactly as produced by Euler's formula. So we can say that Euler's formula is in fact a mathematical representation of the geometry of photons in EM waves. And you'll also note in the oscillating magnetic fields, I've drawn the magnetic vectors as they're normally represented in physics in one direction only. The magnetic vector only points in one direction when in fact there are two fields. All magnetic fields are dipole fields. So e to the I x equals cos x plus I sin x is simply a mathematical way of describing the phase relationship of electric and magnetic fields in EM waves, or photons of energy momentum in EM waves. 2603 really spells out Euler's formula in a geometric fashion. And in this case, we don't focus on the photon so much, but we're focusing on the charge, boson, negative charge. You can see that the geometry is an exponential geometry because it's equilateral. We can keep adding quanta, or alternatively, we could expand the equilateral geometry exponentially to any size, and it remains the same. You can get the square root, the pink section, pink photons in this case, of that field, and you have the linear momentum as a value. And that value, again, follows the exponential pattern. The scale of geometry of the equilateral field is, of course, pi. As we all know, pi quanta, a boson, is 1 pi geometry. We can have positive or negative charge fields, but in both cases, the linear momentum, the square root of those fields, is a real value. It's not an imaginary value, it's atomic stated. So square root of negative 1 is shown here for the first time in mathematics, geometry, or physics as a real measurable value. Moves on, just explains the inverse squared law. It shows that as you expand this, either the equilateral charge geometry or the 2π photon geometry in the field, as it expands over time, the field keeps its geometry, its diamond shape, but as it expands out in greater and greater distance, it drops off according to the inverse square.
So I have the impression that we need to hang up. I'm going to back the sound is cracking up on this one.
Okay, do you want to start it again? Yeah.
Let me just